You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
You're listening to the Rainy Day Podcast, the official podcast of the Ontario Reign, with your hosts, Cameron Close and Zach Dooley. Now, it's time to get in the pod.
Hello there, back after our week-long hiatus. Zach Dooley is here. I'm Cameron Close. Zach, you look different. You're glowing. You are a married man. You've got a ring on your finger. Congratulations.
Thank you. That's about the only difference, I think, being married is that you have to wear this ring now, which is a little bit weird. I'm a lefty. I was trying to get away with wearing it on my right hand. I was told that's not allowed.
You can do it.
I think now that it's done, I think I'll move it over to the right hand. It's the European model, I'm told. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here we are in person. It's strange.
First in-person interview in six months.
It's a long time. I know. I forgot how weird you look.
Yeah. I look. Zoom hides my flaws.
No, you really. Zoom,
camera fixes your flaws.
That must be it. Well, industry. I got to say, you got the ring. Have you opened? So the first thing I did when I got married, like my cousin always, if there was ever a beer bottle and I didn't have an opener, he'd grab it, and so he taught me how to open it with my ring. And I was like, on my wedding day, I had somebody get me a bottle. I was so excited to try it. So I can teach you that trick after this.
Those married secrets.
It's actually one of the best parts.
I have to get my white New Balance dad shoes. I thought they came with the wedding. They don't. Yeah. You have to buy them yourself. So yeah. I have not opened a bottle with my ring.
First anniversary gift.
Haven't gotten my New Balances, but I think those are both high on the list.
Well, very good. Well, it's an exciting time. Congratulations to both you and Lex. And, you know, May... you'd be married for a long, long time. Ideally forever. I hope, you know, why not, right? I'm kind of hoping the same thing for myself. So we'll see what happens. Zach, big weekend coming up this weekend. The Kentucky Derby is in full swing. It is this Saturday. It's strange that it's the second leg of the Triple Crown. It's not hockey related, but the Rainy Day Podcast is going to give you our picks of who's going to win this thing. Who's going to take it home? Which horse do you want to put your dollars on? And since I think horse racing is legal in California, betting, horse wagering, we can talk about this. So we're going to go solely off horse name. And we're not going to read them all off, but I'm very big. I think I've mentioned it on the show before. I like horse names. I always say if I ever have a horse, it's going to be Closing Close, just so the play-by-play horse guy can be, you know, because he's not a lead the pack the whole time. He's like middle of the pack, and then at the end
he breaks. Like seventh as they round the final turn. Exactly. He's a home stretch closer.
Yep. They call him Final Furlong. He just jumps up there. So Furlong, 200 yards, by the way, I learned very recently. Yep. Had no idea. He would be Closing Close so that the guy could be like, and Closing Close is Closing Close. It'd be a great call. Because that's what I do for play-by-play people. It is a family, and we all look out for one another. So I'm going to give somebody that great call. You're welcome, whoever gets it one day when I am a multimillionaire and own my Closing Close horse, my thoroughbred white horse. Why are none of them white in the races? You'll know this. You grew up in Saratoga. You're a big horse guy.
I actually don't know, but it's always the brown. There's chocolate. There's black horses, and there's gray. But you don't usually see a white horse.
Like a stallion.
And maybe they're not real. Maybe it's just like a...
Well, they're real.
Like a... fable.
Maybe they're just not fast horses.
Maybe they're not bred.
They must not be bred. It must be a thing. I don't know what it is. All right, so we're going off the names of these, and I'm going to tell you what I like and what I don't. So I like multiple words. I think that if you're going to have a single word horse name, like a single name, it's got to be really, really good, or else it's really bad.
Only one single name horse.
I thought there were two.
There's Authentic.
Yep.
The 18.
The number 3.
And I believe... Oh, okay, and Enforceable.
So, 3. Hate Authentic. Can't stand it. Hate the name. Enforceable, I can live with. Like, if you're going to be a one name, you got to be a Seabiscuit, which I don't even like that name. But I like Secretariat, right? Who doesn't? Like, that's a great name. You got to have a really good name if you're going to be a one word. So, I like Enforceable. That was actually one of the ones I like. Now, looking at some of these, there are some absolutely horrible ones here, in my opinion. Zach, like South Bend.
Well, I mean...
I know you're a Notre Dame guy.
I think you're going to be one end or the other end. I mean, South Bend, that's a...
But that doesn't sound like a horse name to me. Finnick the Fierce. You can't give your horse a real name.
South Bend had one of the green numbers, too. I mean, that's easy. Yeah. That's free money.
South Bend, 33-1 right there. See, like, I love alliteration, as you'll know. You know, closing close, Cameron close. I like alliterations. Money Moves.
Money Moves.
I'm looking at Money Moves at 19-1, and that's a nice one. I don't like it when they say anything about winning or losing. So this winning impression, 65-1.
How can you be winning impression at 65-1?
Yeah, you're not. Come on,
now he's going to win because I said that.
Don't like that. To be perfectly honest, my favorite name in the field is Tis the Law. It is funny how oftentimes the favorite has a pretty darn cool name. That is a good name.
I like Tis the Law. One, it's Saratoga bred.
There you go.
Which is, you know, capital region. Always have to root for the New York horses. It's a great horse. You know, won the first leg, which is usually not the first leg, but this year was the first leg of the Triple Crown. And it has a cool name. I like Storm the Court.
Not a fan.
I like, I mean, it's you know, college basketball thing.
Yeah, I get it. So I'm going to go ahead and give you my pick because you can't pick Tis the Law. You just, neither of us are going to pick Tis the Law here. Because it's
went off at 3-5.
Yeah, it's too easy. So, Rainy Day Podcast, Cameron Close pick is going to be, for me, number 10, 1,000 Words. I like it. It's going off at 11-1. I like Mr. Big News, too, the number 9. I think that's pretty cool, Big News. But I'm going 1,000 Words. It sounds like a horse that completes an upset, you know, and beats Tis the Law. Somebody's going to beat him. It's going to be some weird name. 1,000 Words, that's my lock.
Since we already talked about Money Moves, which I like.
Yep.
I don't know why I like it, but
hey,
Sol Volante.
Okay.
Just rolls off the tongue. Yeah. I don't even know if that's how say it, but it sounds like it goes together. I don't know if it actually does, but it sounds like it goes together.
All right.
I like Money Moves, and I like Sol Volante.
Well, which one are you locking in?
I'm going to lock in Money Moves.
Money Moves. Okay. That's a great name. I'm glad you did it.
It's a very good
name. Those
are
two great picks. So those are your picks. 1,000 Words and Money Moves. They're 19-1 for Money Moves right now, 11-1 for 1,000 Words. Kentucky Derby, lock it up. You bet $1 million at 11-1. That's $11 million that you could take home. So just keep that in mind.
What is the Rainy Day Podcast tax?
The Rainy Day Podcast tax,
yeah,
of course.
Which is
8%.
I think it's pending in the Senate right now, but yeah, no, that's a percentage coming to this podcast.
Yeah, so that's, and I think that our average listener base, I'd say, we've done the demographics. The average take is usually somewhere between $1 million and $2 million for our listeners. That's the average household income.
I can't disprove that.
No, I'm just talking off the cuff now. So those are your two. 1,000 Words, Money Moves, take it to the bank. But, you know, Tis the Law is probably just going to win, so keep that in mind. We have Matt Molson as our guest today. We spoke to him probably a month ago now. We've been sitting on this one for a while, saving it for a rainy day, if you will. There you go. But it was a great interview. We really enjoyed talking to him. Everybody misses him here in Ontario. Now, he hadn't re-signed with Hershey when we did the interview. Since then, he's now signed, so congratulations to him. It's nice to see that he's not hanging him up. He's at least doing one more year.
Another deal. It would have been, you know, the season ending the way it did. Like, he deserves another chance to win a championship. Hopefully, he's able to get that in a 2020-21 AHL season. Great guy. Everyone here, like you said, really loved having him in Ontario. And, you know, we wish him all the best with Hershey, and I think everyone's going to really like this interview.
I wish that we were talking to him right now, because I would love to hear his Kentucky Derby pick. I feel like he's probably got an eye for horses. He seems like a guy.
Seems like a guy who might have.
Who might know his horses. Yeah. But
he'd probably take NY Traffic after.
That's right. That's like my least favorite name. Maybe we'll shoot him a tweet. And
the other Saratoga bred horse in the field is NY Traffic.
Yeah. Maybe we'll see if we can shoot him a text or a tweet and get his.
There's a couple puns.
His Kentucky.
Could get a couple puns. Like, it could be Mole Volante.
Well,
Matt Mole Volante.
Well, I don't really like Sola Volante. Is it Sol Volante or Sole Volante?
I don't know. King Guillermo Molson, the sixth.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. Mr. Big News keeps calling to me, though, so yeah. Maybe that's the trifecta.
You know what? 49-1, I'll throw a couple dollars
that's,
in your
behalf. That's $49 million if you do a million. So that's a lot of money. You could maybe buy an AHL team, potentially. You never know. All right, let's take a listen and hear what Matt had to say.
Matt Molson used to play forward for the Ontario Reign. He's a longtime professional hockey player, and he joins us now. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks a lot for having me.
Absolutely. It's good to see you again. I think you probably achieved fan favorite status in, what, a year and a half of being there. So I know that all of our fans are excited to hear from you today. But before we talk anything hockey, Zach, I'm actually pretty proud of this one. I came up with it last night. I think you're going to like it.
All right.
Would you rather only be able to use cash for the rest of your life, but only ones, fives, and tens? Okay, but you can't use a credit card for anything or like a bank wire transfer, anything. So if you go buy a car, you got to buy it with all $10 bills. If you want to treat somebody to dinner, then you've got to start pulling out, you know, a ton of $10 bill, like only cash. Or you have to send everything back. Every time you go out to eat or get a drink or something, like, it has to go back. You have to find something wrong with it and always send it back.
I know. I'm way too uncomfortable for that. I'd do the cash.
You do the cash, Zach?
Yeah.
I would do the cash, too. Like, I don't even know if I'd, like, it has to be really messed up for me to even send it back as it
right,
is.
Like, right,
I'm just like, so uncomfortable doing
that. Yeah, I usually just eat it, too. But
yeah. I'll suck it up. Suck it
what
up.
If I said, what if I said once a week you have to send something back? Not every time. Does that change it for you?
Man, I don't really have a problem with the cash thing, so I don't think it's a big deal.
See, for me, it gets impractical. Like, if you want to make a large purchase, if you're going shopping, let's say, like, let's say you're out and going to the mall, you don't know what you're going to get. You're going to Home Depot, you have a big project. Like, you have to bring a briefcase of cash. You're talking about $10 bills because you have to bring a duffel bag of cash everywhere you go. So I'm just thinking about practicality.
That's kind of fun.
All right.
I wonder if that would encourage me to shop in like smaller portions. Cause like, I feel like I feel like I could get around that by like shopping in different ways to where I'm not buying like, you know, I don't buy thousands of dollars worth of stuff as it is, but like, could I online shop?
I think it would deter my wife from making some big purchases. So I think
that's a win-win.
Yeah, that does help you. No, you could online shop. You had to send an envelope to the company, I guess. Certified mail, something like that. All right. Well, this past season with Hershey, and the first thing I want to start with is you go to the All-Star game, which is back in Ontario. Tell us finding out that you're going to be a big part of that game. You're going to be a captain in that game, and you're going to do it in a place where you kind of revitalized your AHL career and had a new chapter in your career. What was that like finding out that you'd be doing that and how the experience go for you?
Yeah, I got the call from, obviously the president of the league. I think I was actually just about to hop in the shower, got a phone call. Saw it was from Springfield area code, called it back. I'm like, hello, and Dave Andrews. And I remember going in the other room. I was like a kid on Christmas. I was so excited, obviously, knowing the All-Star game is in Ontario. And I never played in a professional hockey All-Star game before. So it was a huge honor and even more special to obviously be in Ontario and go back there. So I ran in the room, told my wife. And we were just, you know, really excited to get our whole family to the All-Star game and have them there. It was a special moment. So it was a lot of fun. Wish I could have scored a few more goals on Cal, but it was just a great moment in my career to do that.
What was your what was the lasting memory from that weekend? You know, a lot of really, really cool things happened, you know, over those few days. What was the part that stuck out to you? Was it just, you know, winning the whole thing?
Yeah, winning. I came in, we lost, I think we lost the first game. I came in, I go, guys, we're here, we might as well win. So, you know, I think our team in particular, I don't know about the other teams, but we were pretty gung-ho on trying to win the actual All-Star game. So that was a lot of fun, and to be a captain of the winning team and accept that trophy was amazing. So I think that was a big thing.
Your teammate goaltender Vitek Vanacek ended up becoming the MVP of that game, and he played extremely well. And it's tough for a goalie to win MVP in the All-Star game. Did that follow him back to Hershey? Was that talked about by you a bit in the locker room? Was that something he got excited about?
Well, I thanked them for playing so well because I wanted to win. And the East lost the skills competition. So I told them we had to win the All-Star game. I don't want to look like a fool twice, captain of this team. But I think at that time he was during, obviously, our season with the Bears. He was both our goalies, but he was playing very well going into that All-Star game. And I think he kind of carried that on into our season play after that. But I was definitely very thankful he played very well.
You have the trophy. Did you get to keep it?
I did. I got it. That was awesome. I have it up in my trophy room in Connecticut.
Right in the good one for the trophy cabinet.
So how does Hershey compare to Ontario? Like, what were the wise? But just as far as the teams are run, they're both looked at as very successful AHL teams as far as their markets and their fans. And they both, everybody talks about, obviously the Kings are owned by, the Reign are owned by the Kings, but their management, their ownership is great. You know, both teams are in very good standing. What were the big differences moving team to team there?
I mean, I don't think there was many differences in how the team was run. They're both obviously run very professionally, top notch, everything. So I really don't think there's many differences. Obviously, the Reign and the Bears are top five attendance every year, both of them. So there's no difference in that. I just think they're. You know, I was very fortunate to play on both teams that were very well run, and I think winning was a big thing with both teams. So, to be honest, there wasn't much of a difference at all. A little less.
Maybe the teddy bear toss is different between the two teams.
Yeah, that was a pretty neat moment with that teddy bear toss. But I think how they run, there's not much difference. I think both organizations are very involved in developing prospects and making sure that their players are getting better. I saw that with both teams, very similar. Both wanting to win pretty badly and trying to establish a championship culture where, they develop from the AHL or East Coast, develop that winning habits right from the start. So not much difference at all.
With you in Hershey this year was Phil Maillet, who was with you in Ontario for these last couple years. He was selected to return to play with the Capitals, which is a pretty cool honor for a guy who played in the AHL. What did you see from his game this year? How did he develop since we last saw him?
Well, I think from the first time I've seen Philly in Ontario, I think he's just been getting better and better, developing his game and growing as a player. And he had that last probably month and a half of the season before it got canceled. He was, arguably one of the best players in the entire league. He was playing unbelievable, and it was kind of crappy ending the season like that because he was on a tremendous roll. So I think a guy like that, just he has such a competitiveness about him, and he always wants to do well, and he just keeps getting better. So he definitely carried me a lot of the times through the season this year, playing together a lot. And hopefully he'll get a game in here in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
So let's go back to 16-17 for a minute. You think you're going to be in Western New York in Buffalo for the year. The season starts out somewhat strange. And then all of a sudden, I have to imagine it's the last thing on your mind that you'd be playing in Ontario, California in December. How long did it take you to get to Ontario and kind of just – eventually, you were, a huge part of that locker room, but it seemed like it didn't take very long. I think you had a letter on your sweater. Maybe the first game you were there, I'd have to go back and think about it. How long did it take you to gel in there, like with Mike Stothers and with the team? And was it instantaneous when you got there?
I think I met the team in Austin They're on the road playing Texas. I think they just come from Tucson. So, I had a couple texts, obviously from Mike Stothers and Brett Sutter, being the captain of the team. I had a bunch of texts. I think he put me in the group chat right away. But, I think it was pretty instant. I was in the cab on the way to the hotel. I put my bags in and went for a beer with the guys. And it was very, very easy to be a new guy on that team. There's a lot of great veterans and great young guys, and Stutz there. It was a very easy transition, and I think at that point. In my career, I was just I was happy to be with a team that wanted me, and that was some of the most fun hockey I ever played.
You've said a few times in interviews that first year and the 2 years with the Rain were how you kind of rediscovered your love for the game. What was it about being with the Rain team over those 2 years that really helped you to kind of get that love back?
Well, Stutz was obviously a huge part of that. I think he was just someone that you have a tremendous respect for. And he was a coach that I think that those are the type of coaches that I love to play for, where there's no BS. It's pretty black and white in terms of what's the right thing to do and what's the wrong thing to do. So, I think for me personally, when someone's honest with you and tells you like it is without sugarcoating it, that's what I want in my life. I don't need someone beating around the bush, telling me this, telling me that. I think as an athlete, that's what you want as a coach that's going to tell you exactly like it is. And he demands a lot of it out of his players. And, I think he was a big part why, I had a lot of fun. Just, I think you show him respect and he shows you a lot of respect. So that was a big part. And then obviously the players, there's a lot of great players, people and friends that I'll have a lifetime from that team. So, it didn't hurt that we were a really good team as well, but it was a lot of fun.
That was a really good team. Sorry, Zach. And they end up, you go to the playoffs, you lose in round one to the team that eventually just goes on some weird tear and ends up in the Calder Cup finals. I like to think if that was a 7-game series that the Rain win it. Like, it was just such a weird 5-game series. I hate the 5-game series personally, and it was just a weird one. But what was it like getting back into postseason play, realizing you're going to be in postseason play after you had been in Buffalo for a few years and had missed out on playoff hockey for a while?
It was, going into the postseason is just an indescribable feeling. This energy I think you get each game during the postseason is – it's something that I can't compare to any regular season game. It's just another level. So it's just so much fun to play playoff hockey. And I, try to tell young guys this year we're gearing up for our playoff run with the Bears. And I just tried to explain to them, the playoffs is just something that if you haven't experienced it, you don't know what it feels like. It's just this tremendous amount of energy, and it's just so much fun to play in the playoffs, and knowing each game means so much is what's really fun about it.
I want to take you back to another playoff series you played in. It was 2013, the lockout year with the Islanders, and I remember watching those games on TV, and those games on the island at the Coliseum, I remember being just like the most electric atmosphere that I watched on TV. Like, what was it like playing in the Coliseum in those games?
Well, that first game, back at the Coliseum, it was the loudest building I've ever played in my life. I had the chance to play in Chicago during the playoffs when I was with Minnesota, and that was pretty loud. But coming out in that Coliseum, the first, I think it was the first time in the playoffs in like 10 years, it was like deafening. You couldn't even like talk to guys on the bench. It was so loud. And I remember, I think I scored the first goal that game and I had to like tell myself to calm down on the bench. Cause it was, I was like feeding off the energy and I was like, okay, you need to calm down. We got like first 5 minutes of the game. I was like, you got 55 minutes left here. You gotta calm it down. But it was unbelievable. Just like that low roof. It just like trapped the sound in the arena. And it was crazy. It was definitely crazy.
Almost like a college hockey. You played at Cornell, so you know the college hockey environment. It seems like playoff hockey picks up, like fans become rabid. And even in Ontario, you always hear in the AHL that teams have trouble because you don't have as much time to market your games. But yeah. I remember we had never had AHL playoff hockey, Zach, when we were in Adirondack, and then I got to Ontario, and the place was just packed. Like it didn't matter at all, and I. Seems like the right markets, they come out no matter what.
Yeah, definitely.
So, Zach, I understand you you got something off the books that you want to bring into this.
So I wanted to talk about your draft experience. You were selected in the fourth round by the Rochester Nighthawks in the National Lacrosse League draft. And I saw this on your Wikipedia page, and I had never known that. And what was it like to be drafted in the National Lacrosse League?
Well, to be honest with you, that was always a big goal of mine was to get – obviously play hockey, but get drafted in the NHL. And I played lacrosse from when a young age, and I think at times – when I was having trouble in hockey, lacrosse kind of carried me through those tough times in hockey because I love lacrosse so much. So, to be honest with you, I mean, getting drafted in the fourth round in the NHL was a way bigger honor for me than getting drafted in the ninth round in the NHL. So, it definitely meant a lot to me. I asked to actually go to the Rochester Nighthawks game when I was in Buffalo to meet the owners and everyone who actually drafted me, and they presented me with a Nighthawks shirt with my draft year on it. So that was that's something that'll be hanging up in my house forever.
Every time lacrosse is on, I like to watch it. I enjoy it mainly because I know Bill Belichick likes it, which means that I like it. But I'm always like comparing it to hockey, it's pretty easy to do. Do you think it's a more brutal sport? Every time I watch it, I start to lean that way.
I mean, just the speed of the game of hockey now, that I think it's pretty intense, guys, how fast they're moving now and hitting and stuff like that. But I mean, I guess at times we used to have a couple referees not calling penalties. The slashes would get a little out of hand. So it was definitely a very aggressive. It is definitely a very aggressive sport. But I think just the speed of hockey makes it a little more intense at times.
Maybe not if Martin Furk is shooting like in the All-Star game, but otherwise, I feel like I'd rather be a hockey goalie than a lacrosse goalie. Like, they don't wear anything, and that ball.
Yeah,
like I don't understand how they get in there.
I was more of an indoor guy, so obviously the field across outside there, those goalies they're just playing nuts with the amount of equipment they're wearing. So, but yeah, they're nutty out there outside, guys, whipping balls with no equipment on.
The indoor game, the goalie's almost dressed like a hockey goalie, right? Like I went to an indoor game once when I was a kid, the Albany Attack were in my area. So I went to one of those games. It was awesome. I remember the goalies were wearing like almost hockey goalie padding.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they wear a lot of padding indoor. They have a lot of rules on how much equipment you can wear just like hockey. But yeah, they try to be as big as possible. So they wear a lot of stuff.
So I came up with a little game for the three of us to play here. based off of your NHL draft position. So you were a ninth round pick.
Yeah.
And there were, you know, have been some real contributions to the game from ninth round picks. I wanted to test your guys' knowledge of the best ninth round picks in NHL history. So we'll start off with a bit of an easier one. This ninth round pick was the last NHL player to play without a helmet.
McTavish.
Greg McTavish was a ninth round rounder in 1978.
About this game.
Yeah. I got one specifically for you, Cam, a little bit later on. So we'll see if you can pick that one up.
Great. Now the pressure's on.
It is. So this ninth round pick has the most points all time of ninth round picks?
Pavel Datsyuk.
Hint, played substantially for the LA Kings.
I have no clue.
It is Luke Robitaille, current LA Kings president.
Okay.
Former ninth round pick.
My job's on the line now.
here's another one that might put you in some hot waters. Which member of the Ontario Reign organization was once selected in the ninth round? Was with the team, Moles, when you played here, and is still with the organization.
Is still with the Ontario Reign organization?
Still with the Ontario Reign organization. Was with the organization back when.
Is it Modrý?
It is Yaroslav Modrý.
Thank goodness.
Former ninth round pick of the Devils.
The ninth round. Jeez.
A lot of talent coming out of the
ninth. Am I wrong? Is Datsyuk not a ninth rounder? What did Datsyuk? I think?
He's eighth.
Okay.
He was not a ninth rounder.
Okay.
So now I have one personalized question for each of you. Cam, I'll start with you. This ninth round pick played nearly 800 games in the NHL, the second most NHL games played by a University of New Hampshire alum.
Okay.
Who was selected in 2004. Who is this?
Selected in 2004. This may be too early, but is it Mark Mowers?
It's not Mark Mowers. You're
too late, I mean. Okay. Give a 2004?
That was the draft. Now, you didn't play in the league till a little bit later than that, but.
Oh, is it Dan Winnick?
It's Daniel Winnick.
Okay, cool.
It's the Tiger Boy.
There you go. And yeah, Mowers is like 2000.
He was a little bit later, I think.
Yeah.
So, Moles, on the 2011-12 Islanders, you were one of four ninth-round picks on that team. The other three, like yourself, were key players on that Islanders team. Do you know the other three ninth-round picks?
No. 2011. So, long time, 10-11. Okay. Ninth-round picks. P.A. Parento.
Correct.
Shoot. And, I don't think I'll get another one. I don't know. Give me a hint.
Let's see. One of them played in the Olympics. Actually, they both played in the Olympics.
Pietro. Just kidding. both played the Olympics.
Yeah.
Holy. Radek Martinek on the team?
I think he was an eighth round pick. I never clicked on him.
It's semantics.
It is. One of them played goal. That makes it a little too easy, but.
I don't even remember my goal is at that time. I don't even remember that. ages ago, yeah. Give him a minute.
Evgeny Dabakov and
oh my God,
Mark Streit.
I couldn't get my brain going. Navi, that was actually my first NHL goal was on Navi.
That's a good game, Zach. I like that.
I used to remind him of it every single day we had practice.
I like that game.
That was ninth round trivia.
Speaking of guys you were on the Islanders with, and then I know you might want to get back to the draft Zach, but I'm going to tangent it for a second. You were on there when Trevor Gillies was on the team and made a ton of YouTube videos, right?
Yeah.
So I remember Zach and I had him on the Adirondack Flames, the one-year team. And, you know, he's like one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, right?
One of the best humans ever.
Yeah, he really, truly is. And there's this video that, like, I remember watching at the time. And it's him waiting on the faceoff dot. He's on the wing. And he's just screaming at another guy. It's just like a close-up of his face screaming. I'm like, man. I remember I showed it to him. We were, like, in Toronto. He's like, you know, believe it or not, I'm yelling at my guy. I'm trying to get him pumped up to go for the faceoff. It's funny how those things get misconstrued. And it's funny how you can watch something like that. The guy who's got 200 penalty minutes in 40 games, whatever it was. And, you know, we watched that whole exchange that you had with Pittsburgh. And he walked us through every part of it. And by the end of it, I was like, God, these Penguins, man, these guys were jerks. Like, by the end of it, I was like, thank goodness he was on the ice for all this. Were you part of that game that saw the 300 penalty minutes or whatever it was?
Yeah, it was.
So what was that?
I think I had zero penalty minutes, to be honest with you. I was trying to get a hat trick, but it was a fun game to play, and it meant a lot. That game meant a lot to us as a team after what happened in Pittsburgh. So it was a big game, and a lot of guys stepped up in big ways, and obviously. Gillies, Matt Martin, Michael Haley were a big part of that game and huge parts of our team. So it was a lot of fun, and we had a lot of great people on that team. So I think that's why the response was how it was.
Trevor is one of the great fighters to play at any level. You played with someone I consider who's maybe the best one right now in the NHL, which is Curtis McDermott. Who do you put your dollars behind if those two guys were to square off?
I think that's a pretty tough question, because I think that when you get into guys that are so good at what they do in terms of fighting like that, and are obviously both so tough, I think it's. You know, sometimes someone gets a lucky shot in here or there. In my career, those two are probably tied at the top of the toughest human beings I've ever played with. So that's a tough one to answer. They probably both tell you.
Yeah. So if my research is correct, Moles, you never had a fight. In the NHL, I looked at your penalty minute numbers, and you were in the Lady Bing conversation frequently, and never got the trophy though. You maybe should have won here. I think you had four PIMs over 82 games. But did you ever have a fight anywhere leading up to the NHL?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why I never fought in the NHL. I dropped the gloves a couple times, and they got double minors. So I guess they must have felt sorry for me. But I don't know. I mean, I fought a lot in junior. AHL, I fought a bunch, so I don't know. I always wanted to be on the ice to score. That was pretty much it, I think.
You mentioned that double minor thing. You might have just walked yourself backwards into an age-old Rainy Day Podcast and Rain Broadcast Network conspiracy theory.
100%.
That the league, the AHL's trying to do away with fighting. What were there, 5, 6, Zach, this year that were like fights? They dropped the gloves and they fought, and they gave out double minors, and then no one questioned it. And Stutz was just happy that it wasn't on the penalty minute sheet, so he didn't care. But we were like, they're just trying to make it seem like no one's fighting. We might have just stumbled upon something.
I didn't know that.
Can't go back. Yeah,
several times it happened this year. Think about it. It was a legitimate fight, and they gave each person, double minors for roughing. We're digging up this conspiracy.
You guys have to investigate that.
I think that's our thing.
That and the Denver airport. The Denver airport's been talked about on this show a few times. Yep. If you haven't done that, Google the Denver airport. Something's going on there. I don't know.
No, I actually have.
Yeah, okay, good. He's a believer.
So with the Rain, big part of your last year was, the mentorship that you had with Matt Luff. And I know that Luffer wasn't the first person that – you kind of, invited into your home to spend time with your family. And I was wondering, Did you have a person who did that for you when you were breaking into the league, either with the Kings or that first year with the Islanders?
I mean, they're like, I don't think I was in LA long enough to obviously live with anyone, but I think when I first came to the league, Derek Armstrong was always huge for me. I always still tell him to this day. I don't think he understood how important he was for my game and me feeling comfortable. He was always kind of talking to me and always explaining things to me and looking out for me. So he was huge. And obviously Rob Blake was there. He was a big part. They had a lot of great older players, Beaudry, T.S. Nordstrom. So there's a lot of guys that were older that were good. But I think when I went to the island, John Tavares and I lived in Doug Wade's guest house. But I think it's kind of that kind of where I see myself as a little older and trying to help younger guys, because that was something that Doug Wade was, he was a huge impact on my career. Just being able to talk to him on a daily basis and just the way he treated the younger players and explaining to them things about life, hockey, it didn't matter. So I think that's something that, you owe the game to pass on if you have a little more knowledge and helping people coming up. And obviously Luffer and I got along great in the first year. And then, I mentioned to him, living with us that second year, obviously with the move, a little more expensive move to Manhattan Beach in Hermosa from Ontario. So, it was awesome to have him, and he quickly became a part of our family. Hopefully the borders get open soon so we can come down and visit, or we go visit him. But, I think our family probably talks to Luffer every single day still. So, I think it's something you owe the game to help the younger guys. And obviously if you have a bond with them, it's a little even more special.
What are you doing these days for quarantine? What have you been like? Did you go somewhere? Did you just hunker down?
We had a trip planned to Georgia, so we had to cancel that one. But I've been playing a lot. I've tried to play a lot of golf, but other than that, I went to Buffalo a couple times to visit the Oposos and the Eichels. We're actually away right now with the Eichel family. So those are our getaways, which I think were good for the family to get out of the house. But I think we've gone three places and pretty much just been locked up. Thank God the homeschooling's done. So that's a plus.
How was Professor Molson? How'd you do schooling the kids?
I was in charge of my son. My wife was in charge of my daughter. So we had a good one-on-one action going on. I think I did a pretty good job taught him how to read. So obviously it was a lot of help from the normal teachers and setting up their schooling. I think they did a great job in where we are in Greenwich, Connecticut. They did a tremendous job in Costcom about helping these kids do school away from school. So it was actually pretty easy. I tell people it was tough, but it was pretty easy to do.
Do you live in Greenwich during this, like all the off seasons, like the summers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This is going to sound weird. Doesn't Vince McMahon and like Triple H live there? Do you just see them around? Do you see like,
I haven't seen either one of them, but I see Regis around a lot.
Regis?
Yeah.
Regis Philbin, right?
Regis Philbin?
You too young for that?
No, I didn't. I mean, you just first name dropping Regis Philbin. I guess who else is there? That's cool. That's pretty cool.
I don't think the WWE headquarters is like 10 minutes from, it's in Stanford. So
yeah,
it's right there.
I just know Greenwich is Vince. I always would like,
I don't think I've seen Vince McMahon, to be honest.
That, hey, seeing Regis Philbin, that's a good one. Yeah, that's a good celebrity.
As a legend.
Yeah. Because, man, that's like, that's huge. That's like, you might as well see Alex Trebek out there. That's huge.
Probably a guy you don't like, but I saw A-Rod once.
Zach likes A-Rod.
I like A-Rod a lot.
You know what I like A-Rod on is Shark Tank. I like it when he's on Shark Tank these days. He does a good job. It's a good guess. Some of them are annoying, but he's one of the good ones. I want to, you know, I think we're getting towards the end, but I want to ask you, I hope, you know, let me preface this by saying, I hope you play for another 10 years. I hope your career goes on as long as you want it to. But have you ever given any thought to what you're going to do after you stop playing?
I told my wife I was going to play as long as Tom Brady plays. So
wait till
he retires. But yeah, I think I definitely want to stay involved in hockey. I don't think I want to do nothing. So I definitely want to be a part of that. I think my goal from when I was young was to get into management and maybe work towards being a general manager one day. I think that's something that's always excited me in trying to build a team. So, I guess when I'm done, I'll be trying to work towards that.
If you need any tips, Cam is an expert NHL video game general manager. Yeah. I've heard it's pretty realistic. So, I mean, if you need any tips, just give him a call.
That's kind of what I'm basing my dream on, and how good GM I have in video games. So hopefully that carries.
I am baffled every year when they get to the draft. Like, I always win the cup, and I always have the first 3 overall picks. Like, I don't understand how these teams can't have it. And my average age of my team is 24. It's like every top 3
there you
picks
go.
Plays on the actually on the
doing broadcasting. You should be talking to Rob Blake right now. Get on.
You know what? Sometimes I like to stay in my lane. I don't know what it is. With that though, Matt, I think, Zach, unless you have anything else you want to get in, I want to thank you for coming on and, we really appreciate talking to you. I know the Ontario fans missed you quite a bit, but are happy to see you're having success on the East Coast and are happy that you're not playing for another team in the Pacific Division at the very least. That's always nice.
Hopefully we see him next year in the finals.
That's right. That would be, that'd be good for everybody. Matt, enjoy, the rest of your off season and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks a lot, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks again to Matt Molson. Always enjoy his company, and we're excited, as we mentioned before the interview, to see him play in Hershey once again whenever that season resume is, when the restart is for the AHL. Or I guess, the resume, because we're not really restarting anything. Zach, I got a take for you, and I think you're going to be on the same page as me on this. I think that we're going to be in agreement. I like, when I grew up, I don't watch anymore, I liked wrestling. I liked WWE, and it's not about the wrestling. It's about the drama. It's about the intrigue, and it's about the banter back and forth between people, right? I wish we had a bit more of that sometimes in professional sports, because I think it makes it fun. You can watch YouTube video. There's a black hole of YouTube videos of players complaining, coaches getting into arguments with refs. People love it. So, two coaches already this playoffs, both of them have been eliminated, have been fined. Rod Brindamore, John Tortorella. I believe both of them were speaking out about the refs. So I don't really like it. I understand that there is a line, but I feel like the line is too shallow right now. I want to see players and coaches be allowed to make certain jabs. Maybe the refs are off limits, and maybe that's why we say that. I want to see them take jabs left and right. Like, from a fan's perspective, I love it.
So I'm going to go a step further. Is I want to see, after the two teams are up on the podium, I want to see the ref up there on the podium. Like, why does a player who turns the puck over have to answer for his mistake? The coach who starts the wrong goalie has to answer for his mistake. Why not the ref who blows the call that costs the team a game? Why doesn't he have to answer for his mistakes?
Well, okay. So I don't agree with that. So there are very few times, in my opinion, that calls blow games. Like, you can blow a game by missing a 2-on-1
word, but affect a game for sure.
Right. So everybody's human. We're all going to make mistakes. Umpires and referees aren't excluded from that, unfortunately. But it just is what it is. Like, there's no way to fix that without making it a sky judge and having it be by the book. And even then, in hockey, you're still going to have some arbitration.
There's going to be human error.
Yeah, of course. So for me, though, when the wrong goaltender is started, that's totally opinion based. Like, it's always going to be opinion based. You know, I think about, again, everybody knows I'm a Patriots fan. Bill Belichick didn't start Malcolm Butler in that Super Bowl. We'll never really know. Maybe they get blown out if he starts him. You know, they kept it close. Maybe if he started him, it would have been. You just will never know. Whereas, and again, sorry to use football analogies. It's just easier. It's coming to my mind right now. That Saints, the pass interference call, Rams Saints, that sends the Rams to the Super Bowl. The Saints would have won the game, right? So that is like, you made the wrong call. You were 100% in the wrong. What are we going to do? Get the guy to go sit up against a firing squad because he's wrong. What's he going to say? Anything that he says on behalf of the league is going to be wrong. If he tries to defend himself, he's going to be wrong. But naturally, like, humans are going to defend themselves. He's just going to be wrong. He's going to make it worse.
So you're probably right. But, like, I don't know. I think they should still have to be...
I like the thought of
it. Be held accountable. Like, yeah. Why? Because that ref never has to comment on it. The league will admit that the call was wrong like 3 days later when it doesn't actually change anything. But yeah, the players and coaches, like, if the ref makes a mistake, why can't they say that they made a mistake? Everyone knows it.
Yeah,
but they're up there dancing around it so they don't get fined $25,000, which is, I think, pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, you hear umpires seem to be the only ones that will ever say, like, yeah, I missed that call. You hear it on, like, the perfect game ruining thing and stuff.
You know what? Like, you've heard Kerry Frazier give plenty of interviews where he's talked about calls he's missed well after the fact, which you respect. But, like, in the moment, like, yeah, you know what? They made a mistake. But, like, I guess it's like they have this immunity and everything where no one's allowed to criticize them. They don't have to answer for it. And officials just have this, like, immunity from any critique about a game, it seems like.
I just love the controversy, and so I want more of it. I like it out of coaches. I think the refs thing, I think
the reason is that they think that if coaches are talking in the media, it's going to persuade the officials and it's going to cloud their judgment of games?
No, I think that, you know, I went to a broadcast, like, it was like a minor league broadcasters. I was talking to a few of them, let's just say, okay? And one thing I said was, every time, and this was when I was in the ECHL, and in the ECHL, a lot of the broadcasters sometimes will just go off on the refs because it's a little bit unprofessional.
Oh, we've heard it.
It happens in this league sometimes. Yeah. It very rarely happens in the NHL. There are certain guys that do it, and generally they get slaps on the wrist and they stop. So, but in this league, it happens. ECHL, it happens all the time. I said, if you call out the refs in this league, all you're doing is saying, we work for a really crummy league that can't afford to pay good refs. We have horrible talent on the ice, and this league isn't that legitimate. That's all you're saying. You're not saying it like it's not the NHL. So I think from that perspective, you're saying protect the integrity of the league. The second that you dump on an official, the next time we enter a game, we assume that all our refs are horrible, which the NFL has gotten into. Everybody goes into NFL games now, oftentimes, some teams do, assuming that they're going to get screwed at some point. And I think the NHL has avoided that for the most part. The NBA has gotten into it a little bit. That's their fans clamor a lot. But between the MLB and the NHL, they've done a good job of protecting their officials and protecting the integrity of the rules.
Yeah, I think you can say that. I mean, the NFL for sure. I mean, when they had the replacement refs, that was an absolute debacle.
It was a nightmare.
And I mean that one call in the end zone there made the actual refs a lot of money by bringing him back.
So yeah.
You definitely see it less in the NHL. I mean, you don't have that, like, that one call recently that you're like, wow, this is a call that will live in infamy, at least that I can remember. I mean, it's possible. It's not off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, there has been nothing like that Saints one.
Right.
Nothing even close. Yeah.
And I don't know if there is even that much of an instance. Like there's a penalty that can be called. Like, you know, an overtime penalty, but that's not directly leading to the goal. You can still kill the penalty.
Yeah, the only bad one, and it was because of the rules, like, they couldn't go back and look at it, was that Vegas Sharks thing, mm-hmm. when the Sharks were able to come back. So, like, that was the only...
Could have been. It was a two, and they gave him a five.
And they gave him a five. Thing. That's the only, like, egregious thing that maybe has cost.
But even that is a judgment call, whether it's a two or a five.
Or
it
was.
If I'm not mistaken, it was a judgment call for the official.
At the time, and then they changed the rule, and now you can take a look. But I don't know. I want to see more of it, but I like, you know, there's a fine line between integrity of the league and talking about officials for the sake of, like, give the media something every once in a while. I just think the line is too shallow right now. I think it should be raised. I think we should give them a little bit longer of a leash. That's my thought. With that, I mean, the NHL has been a ton of fun to watch. It's continued to impress. I cannot wait for this game seven between Colorado and Dallas. Colorado has stormed back. They are a fun team to watch. And man, if they win that game seven, I don't know if anybody's stopping them.
They're a good team. A lot of injuries right now for Colorado with the goaltender out. Landeskog was injured last game. So they're fighting through it. You know, after game five, you're kind of like, or after game four, you're kind of like, this team's dead. Like you saw the Cale Makar play behind the net where he coughed it up right in front. You're like, that's an all-time gaffe. And then they bounce back so well with their third-string goaltender in net, who's been traded, I think, a few times this year. It's like, good for him, good for them.
Yeah. And sometimes a little adversity. A little adversity is all it takes every once in a while. All right. Well, we are back on schedule. We'll talk to you next week. No more weddings for the foreseeable future, unless something goes wrong at my house. You never know. And then things turn around quick. But I don't anticipate that. Things are going good on the close residence. All right, Zach, congratulations again.
Thank you.
Everybody have a good one.